Scammers often target senior citizens with fake warnings from the IRS or the Social Security Administration. But they have a new vulnerable group in their sights. It's younger folks struggling with student loan debt. So think about that. You owe tens of thousands of dollars and you're contacted by a company with an offer to have your student loans forgiven. Too good to refuse? Well, Kingdom Advisors President Rob West has what you need to know. Now, today's broadcast is pre-recorded. We're not really here in the studio, but we are here with some great information about student loan scams. Stay with us. All that next on MoneyWise Live. Well, Rob, I suppose it was just a matter of time. Scam artists out there preying on desperate, vulnerable people. And that certainly describes those who are looking at decades, perhaps, of student loan payments.
Well, it's true. And we get calls from so many of them here on MoneyWise Live, Steve, as you know. But as you hear so often, when something seems too good to be true, it probably is. And in this case, it definitely is.
Okay. So how exactly does this scam work?
Well, the Department of Education says it's been contacted by many people reporting that they've received phone calls, but also emails, letters, and even text messages offering them relief from their federal student loans. Now, usually these messages include warnings that the student loan forgiveness programs are ending soon, which is not true. Here are some examples of those false claims. Let me quote from an actual scam. It'll say, "Act immediately to qualify for student loan forgiveness before the program is discontinued." Or you might hear, "Your student loans may qualify for complete discharge. Enrollments are first come, first served." And finally, "Student alert, your student loan is flagged for forgiveness pending verification. Call now." So if you get a call from someone making those claims, well, just hang up. If you get something in the mail to that effect, it can go right into the shredder.
Okay, so that's the hook, but how exactly do the scammers make money on this?
Yeah, good question. By requiring what seems like a relatively small payment up front, and relatively is the key word. If you owe, say, $50,000 in student loans and someone offers to help you get rid of it for $1,000, it sounds like a great deal. So you pay the money, but then you may never hear from them again.
Yeah. I guess what makes this confusing is that there are quasi-legitimate companies that say they'll help you through the federal loan forgiveness process for some sort of upfront fee.
Yes, and it's even more confusing because the Education Department actually does contract with a select group of pre-screened legitimate companies for servicing federal student loans. We'll actually have a link to that list in our show notes today at MoneyWiseLive.org. Just click on the name of today's broadcast.
Okay, yeah, that'll be helpful. Is there an easier way to avoid being scammed?
Well, you have to be careful because a lot of scammers will claim that they're, quote, working with the U.S. Department of Education. But you just mentioned the surefire way you can tell they're not working with the government, and that's the upfront fee or any fee for that matter. Yeah. Stay away from anyone asking for money. Federally approved loan servicers will never charge fees to help you with your student loans. The Education Department says there's nothing a so-called student loan debt relief company can do for you that you can't do for yourself for free. It sounds kind of like a credit repair. And they have a federal loan, group of federal loan servicers ready to help you again at no charge. They even have a new online tool, Steve, to help you get started with the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, which is the most popular forgiveness program. We'll have a link to that as well in the show notes for today.
Okay. Any other types of help that the Education Department might provide?
Well, first, they'll help you determine if you're eligible for loan forgiveness or other programs. That can be confusing. They can also help you lower or cap your monthly federal student loan payments, consolidate your federal loans, and help you get your loans out of default.
Okay. With interest rates so low these days, is there any chance you should be looking around for something in that regard?
Sure. Yeah, you might be able to lower your monthly payment that way and reduce the overall amount you'll have to repay by literally thousands of dollars. Now, that's definitely the case if you have private student loans. There's no downside to refinancing a private loan if you can get a lower interest rate as long as you don't extend the term. If you do extend the term and have to repay the loan, you could end up paying more overall. But with federal loans, there is a downside, Steve. Since your new loan will be private, if you refinance, not consolidate, but refinance, you'll lose those repayment options and borrower protections I was just talking about offered by the federal government.
All right, great information as always. You're listening to MoneyWise Live. However, today's broadcast is pre-recorded. Keep that in mind. We're going to pause briefly and then we'll be back. This is MoneyWise Live.
Do you know if you have enough? Enough money? Enough house? Do you know how much is enough? If not, Ron Blue can help with his book, Master Your Money, a step-by-step plan for experiencing financial contentment. Learn how to save, invest, and give wisely, how to create a long-term financial plan, and how to get out of debt. You'll find it all in Master Your Money by Ron Blue. Available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
If you have money in a retirement account or just a general investing account, you know the stock market can sometimes be like a roller coaster. But it is possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind in investing, no matter what's happening in the market. You can see a short video webinar on that topic at soundmindinvesting.org. Since 1990, Sound Mind Investing has sought to offer financial wisdom for living well. soundmindinvesting.org.
This is Anne Graham Lotz with Daily Light for Daily Living. 2,000 years ago, a solitary figure stood alone against all the visible and invisible forces of evil in the universe. The sin of all mankind was placed upon him as he walked to the place of sacrifice. No one stood with him. He was crucified on a Roman cross alone, suspended between heaven and hell, God and man. As Jesus was cursed and jeered by the very ones he was giving his life for, he was overwhelmed with loneliness, enduring judgment and separation from God as he became sin for us. Matthew 27:46 says, he cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Then he gave his life to reconcile us in a right relationship with the Father. Listen to me. When we receive him by faith, he will never leave us, never forsake us. We will never truly be lonely again. This is Anne Graham Lotz.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
Chatting today for a few minutes about student loan forgiveness scams. And again, we gave you a couple of websites and some information. You'll find all of those notes when you visit our website, moneywiselive.org, which is where you'll find lots of great information, free resources, and links to past radio archives of past radio programs for the last year or 18 months or so. moneywiselive.org. Rob, it's a Friday. Anything else on your mind before we figuratively turn the corner here?
Well, you know, Steve, thinking back over this week, we have covered a lot of ground. We've talked about a lot of different topics, all fun and enjoyable, but lots of social media engagement this week, which we are really grateful for. If you've not followed us yet on Facebook, we'd love to have you do that. Just go to facebook.com/MoneyWiseLive. You'll find us there. You can follow us, and we post daily. We have a question of the day, and you can engage with other MoneyWise Live listeners. We're also on Instagram and Twitter by the same name. So we'd love to have you engage there with us. It's just enjoyable to be a part of this community who want to think biblically about God's money.
Amen. And if we can help you do that, let's talk. 800-525-7000. We begin by going to Wachula, Florida. Bonnie, have to ask, where is Wachula?
It is about 45 minutes south of Lakeland. Lakeland, Florida.
Okay, yeah, I got where it is. Kind of in the center of the state? sort of?
Yes, the Heartland.
The Heartland. Ah, cool.
They call it the Heartland.
All right. Well, what is on your heart today? How can we help you?
Well, I would call this a divine appointment. I was just talking with one of my clients about straightening out my finances, and I've been trying to work through the student loan issue that I have. Oh. What happened with me is I have a student loan, and I got behind on my payment, and I had like four different student loan companies contacting me, talking to me about each other, that I was doing the wrong thing, to the point that I didn't know who to call or talk to, like who was telling the truth.
Mm, yeah. Are these all federal loans, Bonnie, that you have?
Yes.
Okay. And so are you unclear as to which loans are actually outstanding and what the balance is and the payment, that kind of information, or where's the confusion?
Which company to use to pay it, how to actually pay it.
Okay. All right. Well, you could start by a couple of ways. Number one, I would start with the U.S. Department of Education. You can call them at 800-USA-LEARN. And the Department of Education will help you sort out what loans there are and put you in touch with the servicers to help you make those payments and make sure you understand exactly who to pay through and what's outstanding. There's also something called the National Student Loan Data System. You could Google that. Again, National Student Loan Data System. It's a government website that will help you get accurate data on whatever student loans you have outstanding. That would be on the web. Either case would help you, I think, sort out what you have. Beyond that, once you get the information, it'd be really helpful for you to have a spreadsheet, maybe a Google spreadsheet or Excel, where you have each of the loans, the name of the servicer, the contact information, the interest rate, the status. I'd try to get all that in one place. And then you can track it online with the site I mentioned. Then perhaps you might even want to try to synchronize the payment dates. You could do things like set up auto pay. You can even look at a consolidation to simplify things and put them all into one. That won't refinance them. It's still through the Federal Loan Consolidation Program, but it's just going to simplify it because you could end up with one monthly payment and an aggregate rate that represents the rates that you currently have. So there wouldn't be a change there. But I think the starting point is what you're asking about, and that is either the phone call to USA Learn, 800-USA-LEARN, or by connecting with the website that I mentioned and getting the details through the National Student Loan Data System. And you can Google that and you'll find a link. Is that helpful?
National Data System.
Yeah, National Student Loan Data System. And you'll find a link to that website when you Google that.
Hey, Bonnie, I'd like to try something. Bonnie, I'd like to try something we've never done before. So I'm going to apologize in advance if it doesn't work. But we have Seth calling in as well on line four. And Seth, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you guys. How are you all doing?
All right, we're doing great. We also have Bonnie on the line, and she's having some problems with her student loans, paying them, knowing where to go. And my notes say that you've been involved with the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. Can you tell us how that worked for you or any advice you might have for Bonnie?
Let me first start by saying that Google was my best friend when figuring that out. So I really just started by going to Google. I typed in public service loan forgiveness. It directed me to, the government website. When I did that and went to the website, it has drop downs that you can click on, and it gives you everything you need to know about what the program is. It has various hyperlinks that you can click on that can direct you, with what you need to provide. And that was my biggest thing that I did, was making sure that I followed every one of the steps that they recommended. I got all my loans transferred over there's particular servicers that you have to utilize. So that's what I did. And once I did that, it did take a little bit of time. It took a little bit of legwork on the front end. But once I was able to do that and I got placed on a particular payment plan, I've been through my first year of payments. I've done that. And so I'm on to year two. Obviously it's a long, you know, it's a 10-year plan, but, that's pretty much what I did. And I just followed the steps that they recommend.
What government department or nonprofit do you work for that qualifies you for this public service loan forgiveness?
So I work as a district attorney here in Nashville.
Nice.
And,
okay.
So it could be, and that's another thing is if you go on the website, it'll give you a list of all qualifying governmental entities, different, like, I think there are some nonprofits, you know, there, it gives you a list of what would qualify as a particular job.
Yeah, very good. Well, hey, I appreciate you weighing in. Seth is exactly right. If you just Google public service loan forgiveness, the first thing that will come up will be the government's website from the Federal Student Aid Office, which is a part of the Department of Education. And you'll see everything you need to know, including the requirements for what Seth has qualified for, which is either working for an approved government office or department or a nonprofit. Of course, you have to make those 120 qualifying payments, which is 10 years of on-time payments, and then a number of other requirements. But to have your loan forgiven once you complete it is obviously a huge opportunity, and we appreciate you calling that to our listeners' attention. Bonnie, Seth, thank you for calling today, and God bless you both.
Thank you very, very much. 800-525-7000. Up to Concord, New Hampshire. Hello, Karen. What's your situation?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm just trying to figure out if there's any way to go about doing this. I have three kids. Two went through college. One's in college now, and we've kind of figured this out at this point with the third one. But what happened was my other two, we did Parent Plus loans through direct loan, thinking that was the smart move. My husband is the primary breadwinner, so he ended up doing the loans through him. I found out that I've worked for a nonprofit hospital for 26 years. I found out with the third one that I could have been the primary and had the loans forgiven within 10 years as long as I was still with the same company. So now we're trying to figure out, I've heard it's very difficult to get it rectified so that you can kind of move around to put you on the loan to get them forgiven, but I heard it's very difficult.
Yeah, there are some hoops you're going to have to jump through, and I do a little bit of research on this. I'm not up on exactly what it's going to take. My understanding is that if you're on one of the income contingent repayment plans with a Parent Plus loan, or you consolidate through the Federal Consolidation Program, then that's where you may open up the opportunity to qualify for the public service loan forgiveness. But I would just call the Department of Education to see if you can get that forgiveness retroactively. Likely not, but you're going to want to make sure you understand all of the details there before you proceed, because what often happens is people think they're on track for the public service loan forgiveness and they've missed one of the key elements, and only to find out either halfway along or when you get to the end that you don't in fact qualify. So you're going to want to get all of the details based on your particular loans, what needs to happen in order for you to perhaps qualify, and I would go right to the Department of Education to ask those questions, Karen. We appreciate so much your calling today and wish you the best as you explore that.
Karen, God bless. Thank you very much for contacting us. Hope this works out for you. This is MoneyWise Live with Rob West. Today's broadcast is pre-recorded, so we won't be taking any calls, but we have some calls lined up and some great information coming your way that I think you'll find usable at the very, very least. We'll be right back after this.
God cares a great deal more about our money than most of us imagine. In fact, Jesus says more about our use of money and possessions than about anything else, including both heaven and hell. In Managing God's Money, author Randy Alcorn breaks it all down in a simple, easy-to-follow format that makes it the perfect reference tool if you're interested in gaining a solid biblical understanding of money, possessions, and eternity. Managing God's Money is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Hebrews 4:12 says, "For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword." Here's Beth Moore with a quick word.
Turn with me to Psalm 60. Psalm 60, verses 4 through 6. But for those who fear you, talking about those who fear God, you have raised a banner to be unfurled against the bow. Save us and help us with your right hand, that those you love may be delivered. God has spoken from his sanctuary, and then it continues. I want you to see what verse 4 says because it's so important to our lesson. But for those who fear you, you have raised a banner. Now, here's the deal. You see, what Scripture tells us over and over again by concept is this. We have proper fear of God. We don't need to fear another thing. Not when we have a proper fear of God. For those who have a reverence and a holy fear toward him, he comes as our banner against our enemy. See, sometimes the reason why we get slaughtered in warfare is because we have small thoughts and disrespectful thoughts about God. Just flippantly throwing around his name like it means nothing. He said, when you revere me, when you respect me, I stand before you as your banner in warfare. But he says this, you don't fear me, I come against you as the Lord, their banner. Talking about people who are not his, that have no fear of him. He says, I'll either come against you or I'll go in front of you. And it's all about what we do with the fear of the Lord.
You've been listening to A Quick Word with Beth Warren. The study of Galatians is now available as an online experience. Sign up today at BethMoore.org or join Beth in January 2021 for the release of the printed workbook edition. Keep listening for another Quick Word with Beth Moore.
Siri, I need some advice.
What's up?
I have questions about planning for retirement, long-term care insurance. I don't know where to start.
It sounds like you need the MoneyWise app. It's a free app that will help you find those answers and more.
Really?
Sure thing. You can ask your questions within the app and access helpful articles and MoneyWise podcasts.
Sounds great. Siri, download the MoneyWise app.
Okay, searching for MoneyWise on the App Store. Learn more at app.moneywise.org.
You're listening to a best of broadcast of MoneyWise Live. This program is pre-recorded. You can email us at questions@moneywiselive.org. questions@moneywiselive.org. We do our very best to remember that God owns it all. That's a great place to start. And then everything else seems to fall into place once you've established and driven that stake into the ground that God owns it all. And we're just managers or stewards of what he provides. Let's go out to Yukon, Oklahoma. Hello, Kelly. What's your situation?
Well, I have a 19-year-old daughter that has a credit score of zero, or had a credit score of zero, and I put her on as an authorized user on one of my credit cards. I have credit score in the middle 800s. And I was looking for a way to get her credit score up, to get her started in life. And by putting her on one of my credit cards, within a couple of weeks, her credit score jumped up. And then I went to the bank and talked to them about getting a loan to buy her a new car. Although I was going to, it wasn't a new car, a used car. And my question is it wrong to borrow money and I'm going to co-sign a loan for her on a vehicle that she's not actually paying back. I'm going to pay the loan back. We're just putting the money in her account and letting her make the car payments, just something to start her payment history.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you asking the question. Obviously, there's a very clear warnings in God's word around co-signing. But what you're doing is you're not really co-signing just to give her the benefit of your credit with an expectation that she's going to make the payments and make good on the note. You're going to own it. You're going into it knowing that you're responsible for it. You're going to be the one paying it. But you're giving her the benefit of having that reported to her credit file. I don't see anything wrong with that. The only potential downside, Kelly, is that if something unforeseen happened in your life that did not allow you to make these payments on time, one of the repercussions of that is that negative information will follow her to her credit file as well. So you just have to recognize that. But assuming you're going into this with the full expectation to repay, you've got the reserves there, you have the ability to cover it, even if you were to lose a job,
job or something were to come out of left field, then I think it's absolutely okay to put her on there. Again, the difference being that you are going into this knowing you are fully responsible for it, and there's not an expectation that she'll make good on it, when if she could not, it could create damage in the relationship between you and her. And, you know, that's what we want to try to avoid in a co-signing situation. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I already owned the vehicle. I was just going to borrow money against it and then just put the money in her account and allow her to make payments back on it. So there would be no,
okay.
I'm out like $600 in finance charges over the course of the 3 or 4 years that we would finance it.
Yeah, so that's a different understanding than I had originally. So the only reason you're taking out this loan and paying interest is to build her credit?
That's correct, yes. Just to get her credit. That's the only reason.
Yeah, and what kind of interest are you going to be paying on the loan, or is she?
It was 3.7 is what I got the loan at.
I'm not a big fan of that approach, Kelly. I just think there's, you know, it's not that important. She's going to build credit over time. I'd rather see you get her a secured credit card where you perhaps put a deposit, or she does, of $200 or $300 or $400 on file, on deposit at the bank. Get a credit card against that she would use for recurring budgeted items every month, and then pay it off. And pay no interest and just build her credit over time that way, rather than you all paying interest purely for the sake of building credit. It's going to happen. And, students coming out of college every day starting out lease apartments and, begin to do business with other people. And, you know, you just have to work with it and understand the implications. But paying interest just to build the credit score a little bit faster when there's other ways to do it without paying a dime would be my preferred approach on that. Do you follow what I'm saying, though?
Absolutely. That's why I called.
Yeah. So I'd bail on that. Let's go get the secured credit card. Let her use that for budgeted items. At the same time, why don't you teach her, if she doesn't already know, about setting up a spending plan and really beginning to learn God's way of handling money. And do me a favor, stay on the line. We'll send you a copy of Howard Dayton's book, Your Money Counts. And why don't you start working your way through that with her, a chapter at a time, so she can see God's plan for his finances that she's managing. And we appreciate your call today, sir.
Thanks so much, Kelly. And of course, if she's not in college yet, as soon as she hits campus, the credit card folks will be there giving out free T-shirts and applications. Be careful there. This is MoneyWise Live. Your host is Rob West. I'm Steve Moore. Back with more after this.
How should we as Christians think about investing? What if we could invest our money in a way that aligns with what we believe? At Eventide, we believe it is possible to love God and love our neighbor in the very practice of investing. We design investments for performance and a better world, so you can invest for the future with a sense of wholeness and purpose. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at investeventide.com.
Christian Healthcare Ministries enables believers to show love for one another by sharing each other's health costs. Through CHM's voluntary health cost sharing programs, members uplift each other spiritually and financially. CHM is an eligible option under the Affordable Care Act and a Better Business Bureau accredited charity. Interested? Learn more by calling 800-791-6225 or online at chministries.org.
Hi, my name is Jessica. I'm a communications major at the Moody Bible Institute. For this week of Thanksgiving, the Moody Radio Verse of the Week is found in 2 Chronicles 5:13. The trumpeters and musicians joined in unison to give praise and thanks to the Lord. Accompanied by trumpets, cymbals, and other instruments, the singers raised their voices in praise to the Lord and sang, "He is good. His love endures forever." That's 2 Chronicles 5:13, the Moody Radio Verse of the Week.
Things are always happening at Moody Radio. God is at work in listeners all around the world. Our monthly online newsletter, Uplift, has changed in order to bring you more listener stories, more program updates, and more listening resources. Be among the first to know about Moody Radio's ongoing outreach. Check out the all-new, free e-newsletter, Uplift. Subscribe right now. Go to mymoodyradio.org, mymoodyradio.org.
Siri, I need some help.
What's up?
Well, sometimes I feel like I can't get a handle on my money. I mean, where does it all go?
It sounds like you need the MoneyWise app. It's a free app that will help you plan your budget and track your spending.
Oh.
Like the $3 you spend every morning on coffee.
Well, not every morning.
You'll also get access to free biblical financial advice.
Sounds awesome. Let's do it.
Okay, searching for MoneyWise on the App Store. Learn more at app.moneywise.org.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. President Trump has lost another court battle. A federal appeals court in Philadelphia has rejected the president's latest effort to challenge the election results in a case expected to reach the U.S. Supreme Court if the president appeals. Hyundai and Kia will spend $137 million on fines and safety improvements because they move too slowly to recall over 1 million U.S. vehicles with engines that can fail. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration announced those penalties today. They resolve a 3-year government probe into the company's behavior involving recalls of multiple models dating to the 2011 model year. The agency says automakers have to recognize the urgency of safety recalls. Stocks finishing higher in a shortened session, the Dow up 37, the NASDAQ gained 111 points. This is SRN News.
You're listening to MoneyWise Live. Rob West is your host. I'm Steve Moore. We have some interesting calls all lined up. And now today's program, as we mentioned earlier, is pre-recorded, so don't try to call in yourself. But Michael's been holding. He's just down the street in Adairsville, Georgia. And Mike, what's cooking? How can we help you?
Yes, good afternoon. And thanks for all that you guys do to help us navigate the financial waters in this day and age.
Yes, sir.
Here's my question. My wife and I are both, I'm 64, she'll be 64 in a couple of months, and she currently had a 15-year level term policy that has moved outside that level term period, and so we're experiencing increased premiums yearly. We have our emergency fund, everything all set aside. We have our final needs funds set aside, and we're just trying to figure out, navigate how to get life insurance. We've been turned down 3 times now because of a pre-existing condition, and do we really need life insurance on her?
Yeah, that would be my first question, Michael, is what is the purpose of the insurance? Are you all continuing to work? And for instance, as it relates to her, if something were to happen to you, would that create a hardship for her? And would the opposite be true if something were to happen to her related to you?
I have been retired for about 13 years. Federal retiree, I have a very good annuity. Okay. And I have a $2 million life insurance policy should something happen to me. She hasn't worked since I've been retired, so there's no income to replace or anything like that. So I would not be really impacted if something happened to her because there's nothing to replace.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that's the answer. And the pre-existing condition adds to that, because even if we could find an insurance company, and by the way, if you were to really need a policy on her, I'd encourage you to go to an independent life insurance agent who really knows the various companies and players, who could perhaps find a company that is more predisposed to extend a policy based on her particular condition, because they do vary. But based on what I'm hearing, that's not necessary, because in the event that the Lord calls her home, there's not a financial impact on you, and therefore that money that you'd be spending, and probably considerably more than what you would be expecting to spend because of she's now 15 years older and she's got this pre-existing condition, that money is just unnecessary and can be redirected to other places. Additional savings, additional giving, if you have any debt, retiring that debt. Does that make sense, though?
It does, and we have no debt other than our mortgage, and okay. So we're in good shape there, and we've got our emergency fund set aside. But that was her point. Her point was like, why are we keeping spending this, you know, $80-something every month when we could be putting it into savings or something?
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, so often what happens is we look at that and think, well, everybody needs life insurance, and we've always had life insurance. Why would we not have it? And that's true. We need it until we don't need it anymore. And I think you're in that position, certainly as it relates to her, which is a good thing, because now that money can be redirected elsewhere. And the bottom line is you've managed your God's money well in such a way that you don't need it, because you've been a saver, and she's not bringing an income into the home currently. And for all of those reasons, that money can be redirected.
Michael, we wish you the best. Thank you very much. I think you and your wife have found arrived at the correct conclusion there. Thanks. At Downers Grove, Illinois. Hello, Dale. What's your question?
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Happy to.
What I've got here, back in 2012, I refinanced for $170,000 on my home in Downers Grove for 3.75%. I recently got a notice from my mortgage company that said we're paying, the minimum is $787 a month, but I've been paying $1,200 a month for quite a while now.
Yeah.
And he said if I keep going currently, I have the loan paid off in 11 more years.
Nice.
But if I refinanced for 15 years at 2.625%, I'd have it paid off in 9 years and save $19,000 in interest.
Yeah.
And I can't find a mortgage calculator to confirm his numbers, so I'm wondering, does that sound like a good idea to you guys?
Hmm. Well, I like the idea of you. You sound like a disciplined guy. The fact that you've been paying, as much extra as you have been each month tells me that you're living well within your means. You're living on a spending plan. You don't have any issues with that. So the fact that you could take a 3.75% mortgage, down to just over 2.5% is a great thing. And as long as you don't fall into the trap of, you know, reducing that minimum payment, because it'd likely go down, but continuing to send that save $1,200 a month, I assume that's correct. And you could go online and look at an amortization schedule, just put in mortgage calculator or Google amortization schedule, and you could run these numbers to prove out what he's saying. I think the thing to look at, though, Dale, is, is this the best mortgage available to you? Because what we find is this is the largest transaction we'll make. And oftentimes what people do is they don't shop around. They just take the first offer they get. And although clearly that rate is an improvement, you may be able to do a little better than 2.625 on a 15-year, or you may get the same rate but with less expenses. You know, there may be some discount points that he's built in here or something like that. So I'd get at least a couple more offers, and if you don't know where to go, I'd go to bankrate.com, see who's offering the best rates right now. It's probably going to be an online bank for 15-year mortgages with people that have your credit score, and get good faith estimates from those lenders as well to compare alongside this one. But the bottom line is, if you keep up the same payment and cut it about a point or more off of the mortgage, you are, in fact, probably going to pay this off a lot quicker, save a lot in interest, even though you're going to spend, could be $1,000 or more on the refi. And that's what you're going to want to look at. Are you saving more in interest than you're spending to do the refinance in the first place in terms of expenses? Do you follow all that?
Yes, I do. I think that answered the question, and thank you very much.
Okay, Dale. God bless you, sir.
Thanks, Dale. You know, Rob, I'd like to go back, if you don't mind, to Michael's call just a moment ago. They were wondering about life insurance. Did they really need life insurance? What's the purpose of life insurance? You know, I know people who have quite a bit of money tied up in life insurance because they feel that's the only way they're going to really have anything to leave to their children as an inheritance is a large life insurance policy. Does that hold water? Is that a good way to approach it?
You know, Steve, I guess the key there is, are you going to be able to maintain that policy until death? And if you can, at what expense? right? Because oftentimes when we talk about insurance, life insurance at least, I'd rather you buy pure insurance, which is going to be term insurance, where you're just paying the straight mortality cost during the season where you're building wealth, and then you drop it. If you want to carry it out till death, you're going to pay a lot more in premium because it gets more expensive over time to insure yourself, and then you're probably adding in a savings component with a whole life policy, and you know that's just not my favorite way to build wealth over time. So that's really the only issue I have with trying to have a policy as an inheritance is, did you truly factor in what it's going to take for you to maintain that policy throughout your entire life?
Right, yeah. Okay, good point, Rob. Thanks very much. Hey, if you're just tuning in, it's MoneyWise Live. If you haven't visited us online at all, that website is moneywiselive.org. You'll find lots of helpful, useful, and free information there. Also, our radio archives and much more, moneywiselive.org. Today's program is pre-recorded. Don't call, but don't go away. We'll be right back.
You probably have a strategy for your finances, your career, even your retirement. But do you have a strategy for your giving? At the National Christian Foundation, we can help you create a giving strategy to inspire your family, maximize your resources, and leave a lasting legacy of faith. To learn how, visit moneywise.org/NCF.
Hi, I'm Barry McGuire. I'm here to help you understand how urgent and how fun it is to share your faith at every opportunity through the eyes of a layman. It's been said, these are the days that try men's souls, and indeed they are. No matter where you are in the political spectrum, none of us ever expected to be where we are at this moment as a nation. On the surface, there's no logical explanation for where we are today. That's because it's not logical. Satan blinds the minds of unbelievers, and most Americans are unbelievers. So our entire nation of all persuasions is being deceived by Satan as we sit here right now. It's called spiritual warfare, and it can't be fought with politics or the minds of man. They are of no consequence to Satan. In fact, godless politicians are among his most powerful tools. With most of our churches remaining closed, our only hope is for individual Christians like you and me to ignite a spiritual revival across America, one person at a time. There is nothing more exciting than knowing God is using you to move people closer to Him. Join us at IgniteAmerica.com.
Are you the dad of a dad or the mom of a mom? For Grandkids Matter, here's Dr. Ken Canfield.
Have you grasped the lasting potential of your influence as a grandparent? Now think about it. As you invest in your grandkids, some of that influence will carry forward to the way they relate to their children and grandchildren and so on. So you may be impacting numerous generations to come. Given the grand task before us, consider these questions. What values and characteristics are important to you? What are your grandchildren learning from being around you? Are there ways you may need to change your relationship and influence with them? What needs to be added to or subtracted from your life so you're a more reliable role model? As you ponder those, remember, we're here to help at GrandKidsMatter.org and on Facebook.
Would you like your life to be infused with joy? Would you like to interject an eternal dimension into even the most ordinary day? Author Randy Alcorn says you can when you discover the Treasure Principle. In a concise, power-packed style, this newly revised and updated book offers a six-step plan to finding the immediate pleasure and eternal rewards of the Treasure Principle. And once you discover it, life will never look the same. The Treasure Principle is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Nice to have you with us today. It's MoneyWise Live. Your host is Rob West. I'm Steve Moore. We love chatting with you. Do us a favor. If you enjoy this program, perhaps someone else you know would enjoy it as well. Maybe let them know about this radio program and this radio station so they can enjoy it. Just a thought. Canton, Ohio. Hi, Melissa. How can we help you?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I just have a question in regards to stewardship and children in college. So we have a blended family. There's six of us. And my eldest went to college and did not fare well in her first semester. And we got mixed up with a very large Parent PLUS loan. So since then, we've decided we've just paid that off. We've decided we don't want to do Parent PLUS loan anymore because it's absolutely like terrifying for that many kids to sign a Parent PLUS loan. Mm-hmm. So my question is, stewardship wise, does it make biblical sense to sign a Parent PLUS loan when there's so many children left for college at $30,000 a year if they go away? So that's like part A. My thought and what my husband and I have been discussing is that they go to a community college or they get an academic scholarship. However, what if they get a partial scholarship and then the only other way for them to make that happen is a Parent PLUS loan? We're in our 50s and we got hit really hard in the recession and we started literally all over again. So we are just now starting to tithe and our savings is not there because we're paying everything off. So that way we can put more towards retirement.
Sure, sure. Yeah, Melissa, I can appreciate where you're coming from. And I think the key is we've got to recognize that you are stewards of what God has entrusted to you. And you're trying to be the best steward you can be moving forward to both honor your obligations currently, which is your living expenses, providing for your family, doing whatever giving you're doing. And I'm thrilled to hear you've started to become a systematic giver, as well as trying to pay off your debt, which is all really important. And you need to be saving for the future because there are some ways to pay for college, namely scholarships and grants and financial aid and perhaps working in the summer or getting an on-campus job. There are not those ways to pay for retirement when you're no longer working, redirecting your time and energy to perhaps God's next assignment for you. And so you need to be thinking about that. And the last thing you'd want to do would be to take on all this debt, not only for this child, but other children coming behind this child that you're then responsible for, because the bottom line is with a Parent PLUS loan, you are in fact responsible for making the payments. Even if you have an arrangement where your child is going to make the payments, you're ultimately the only person responsible. And so if they're unable to do so, even because they intend to, but just for unforeseen circumstances, they can't, that's ultimately going to fall back to you, other than you refinancing or your child refinancing with a private lender in their name. But they'd have to be able to qualify for that. They'd lose the income-based repayment options, and they'd likely have a much higher interest rate because they'd be just starting out and not have really the ability to qualify for that at a competitive rate, if at all. And so you're exactly right. It is going to fall on your shoulders. So I think at this point, you all need to really think and pray about what are we willing to do for each child. If we're going to borrow, how much would we borrow, not for one, but for all, knowing we're ultimately going to be responsible if they can't pay? And the answer may be none. We just don't feel comfortable. At that point, we've got to get creative. My wife grew up in a single family home, and her mom made it clear there was not money there. And so they turned their living room into a scholarship factory. And she had well over $100,000 in scholarships by the time it was all said and done, worked very hard, both on campus as well as prior, applying for all these scholarships and grants and getting good grades and those types of things to pay for college. So I don't think we should just automatically assume we need to go to the debt, especially given what you've described and your desire to really honor God with your finances moving forward. Do you follow that, though?
Absolutely. Is there a specific place to go, though, to find all those scholarship options? If you go out there, you kind of go on this wild goose track and you get lost in there. It's like an abyss.
Yeah. Yeah, there really are. I mean, there's so much more than when she was even doing it. I would go to, first of all, go to Amazon. There's some wonderful books out there that are updated every year with all of these. And we'll also put in our show notes today a few websites that have tens of thousands of scholarships, depending upon the track that they're on, the major they're seeking, what part of the country you're in, whether you have any unique family heritage, things like that, where you can look for different types of scholarships. We've done programs on this in the past, so you can search on moneywiselive.org, but we'll also put a few of those links in our show notes today for today's program. So be sure to check those out. And then spend some time with your husband kind of thinking through how you're going to approach this. And then I would really encourage you finally here, Melissa, to sit down with each of the kids, make it clear to them what your expectations are, what you're willing to do, what you're not willing to do, so they can know that in advance and then really develop their plan on how they're going to approach college.
Melissa, thank you very much. We wish you and your family the very best. Thanks. Savannah, Georgia. Hello, Jeff. You have a question today?
I have a long-term care insurance question. I just turned 59. I'm still working. My wife is 63. She's retired. I'm planning on working for a couple more years. We have no children. The Lord has really blessed us to where so far between both her IRA and my 401k, we've been able to save approximately $2 million for retirement. Hmm. So my question is, do I need to buy long-term care insurance, or should I try to finance it myself?
Yeah. You know, Jeff, I think you could go either way. Some people would say with $2 million in a nest egg, you could finance yourself. My typical rule of thumb, and this isn't hard and fast, this is just that's all it is a rule of thumb, is $3 million and above is where you would really start thinking about self-insuring. Reason being, the costs obviously continue to climb, although if your retirement is invested, it will as well. But take, for instance, nursing home care, which today could cost $8,000 a month or $96,000 a year. If you invested that $2 million and looked for a 4% annual rate of return, that would only throw off about $80,000. So I realize you may have other sources, Social Security and other things that could step in, but you're still going to have a lot of those other expenses beyond that that you're going to need to cover. And so that's where you could, it's possible that you could, you know, run through your assets depending upon your situation. Now, the average long-term care need is going to last only about 18 months to 3 years. And so, again, you could make the case that we should be just fine. And ultimately, we don't want to put our trust in our stock portfolio anyway. We want to put it in the Lord. But I think you're kind of right on the bubble there is what I'm saying, where you and your wife need to just pray through it. But having a policy that perhaps has a smaller daily benefit just to offset what you would already be able to generate through your own savings and investments, I think might give you some added peace of mind, given that healthcare costs continue to rise. And if there's something that's going to erode your assets in a hurry during this next season of life, it's going to be healthcare in just about every situation. So that's my best advice. I'd probably take a look at it, but do your planning with a long-term care insurance specialist in light of, obviously, the rest of your financial life, so they factor that in with the policy you select.
Jeff, we're glad you called today. Sounds like you guys are heading in the right direction. We pray God will bless you. Thanks very much. To Georgia and David, we're going to have to be very, very brief about this. Give us the high points, okay?
Yes, that's fine. Thank you so much for the call. But
sure.
The question is this. I have gotten my retirement, and the company that I work for, I've then moved all my retirement assets over and moved it to a broker. But I had a 401k at the same company, and they have told me that I cannot move the 401k until I either actually leave the company in retirement or quit.
Yeah.
Is there some way I can get it out other than that?
You know, it's likely not possible. Many companies will require you to separate from the company to do a rollover. There are some that allow what are called an in-service rollover, but that's not the norm. Most companies will require you to separate from the company, and this will all be spelled out in the plan docs in order for you to take that 401k and move it out to an IRA. So it's really specific to your particular company and your plan as to whether or not that's possible. And my suspicion is because you've already inquired and they've told you you can't, that's in fact the case. So I think at this point, so long as you're still with the company with that particular account, the 401k, the key is just to look at the investment options inside the plan and just make the best decisions you can. And then at some point, once you separate, you'll be able to roll that right out. But you're probably not going to be able to do it until that point.
Well, I do. Thank you very much. I just didn't know if there was a secret way to get the money moved.
If I come across that super secret way to do it, David, we'll take down your number here. I'll give you a buzz.
Thank you so much.
All right. God
bless you,
buddy.
Dave. Thanks. All right. What other secrets are you hiding? What else haven't you told us? Our listeners are waiting with bated breath. Anything else?
Monday. Stay tuned. Monday. The
Monday.
Finance secrets. from Rob.
Mm-hmm. All right. All right. You know, lots of calls today. Lots of calls today on retirement and preparing for retirement and 401ks and all of that. But not a whole lot of discussion yet about God's will when it comes to retirement and God's will when it comes to planning for the end of life. Any thoughts in that regard? Because really, that's our focal point.
Well, it is, Steve, and you're exactly right. And there is probably some folks listening. Well, I know there's some folks listening saying, man, it'd be nice to have $1 million in the bank. And that's just not me. Recognize that's a lot of us. And the key is to be found faithful with whatever God has entrusted to you. Now, is there anything wrong with wealth? No, absolutely not. There was plenty of people in the Bible that had vast wealth. I think of King Solomon and a host of others and others who really struggled. And the key is faithfulness to opportunity. What has God put in your hand, and how do you be the best steward you can be today and in the future and honor God with what he's entrusted to you?
Thanks, Rob. And thank you again, as I mentioned, for tuning in and for listening and for being a part of the program. MoneyWise Live is a partnership between Moody Radio and MoneyWise Media, and you, our listeners. For Rob West, I'm Steve Moore, hoping you and yours have a wonderful remainder of the day. Then join us again next time.